From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled 5-4 that gay marriage is now the law of the land. States must now allow same-sex couples to marry, and they must respect same-sex marriages from other states. That means 14 states that do not allow same-sex marriage now have to fall in line with the others. The majority decision was written by Justice Kennedy, just as he did in the court's previous three major gay rights cases, dating back to 1996. Chief Justice Roberts wrote the dissent. We will unpack it all this hour. On Point, gay marriage is now the law of the land. You can join us on air or online. Did the Supreme Court get it right? How does the ruling change this country? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We'll look at the impact of today's ruling from every angle this hour. We begin with a deep look at today's ruling with two constitutional law professors with personal experience at the High Court. Joining me from Philadelphia, Kermit Roosevelt, professor at the University of Pennsylvania Law School. He clerked for former Justice David Souter. Welcome back, Kermit. Nice to have you.
Thanks, Jane. Happy to be here.
And from Arlington, Virginia, Naomi Rao, professor at George Mason University Law School. She clerked for Justice Clarence Thomas. Welcome back to you, Naomi.
Thanks, Jane. Thanks for having me.
So let's hear supporters cheering outside the Supreme Court after the ruling on same-sex marriage.
We did it.
Kermit, we'll start with you. Take us through this historic ruling at the U.S. Supreme Court.
Well, what happened today is really what's happened historically with civil rights movements. We saw it with race discrimination. We saw it with sex discrimination. Now it's sexual orientation. There's a moment when a kind of discrimination seems natural, it seems justified, but a social movement challenges it. It makes its arguments in constitutional terms, and eventually, usually when public opinion has shifted, the Supreme Court accepts those arguments. It says, now the Constitution is on your side. And that's what it said today.
Naomi, how did you read the ruling?
I think Kermit's right. That's what happens oftentimes in these cases. As a policy matter, I'm absolutely pleased with the result as a political matter. But I think the majority's opinion has some serious problems because, you know, the Constitution is not really a charter for all the policies that we like or feel strongly about. And so I'm concerned about the fact that the court has taken this issue out of the democratic process.
And so what do you see as the majority opinion, the biggest issues here?
The biggest issues with the majority opinion?
Yes.
Well, I think, today, you know, people are obviously celebrating, many people are celebrating the results that the court has reached, but historically the court has not always been on the side that we think of as associated with social progress. And if five justices can find a fundamental right here, they may in other cases, reach a result that people in the public are not as comfortable with.
And so
they're taking this choice, you know, out of the hands of the people.
Kermit Roosevelt, what does this mean now then for states that did not previously allow same-sex marriage?
Well, it means that they're going to be forced to allow same-sex marriage. So we do now have a nationwide fundamental right to same-sex marriage.
And will that be immediate?
I think so, yeah. The court didn't say anything about delaying it. I would expect the consequences to be immediate, yeah.
What about the breakdown of the court on this one, Kermit? 5-4 ruling, how do you interpret that?
Well, I wasn't really surprised by that. The only person I had doubt about was Chief Justice Roberts. Chief Justice Roberts cares about the court as an institution. I thought he might not want to be on what I think history will definitely look at as the wrong side of this decision. On the other hand, I also thought there was a chance he might do what he seems to have done here, which is take the opportunity to write the main dissent and say, I think this may be good policy. I encourage you to celebrate it. What I don't like about it is taking the decision away from the political process.
Here he is. I'll read part of his dissent. It was 29 pages long. Toward the end of it, he says, if you are among the many Americans of whatever sexual orientation who favor expanding same-sex marriage, by all means, celebrate today's decision. Celebrate the achievement of a desired goal. Celebrate the opportunity for a new expression of commitment to a partner. Celebrate the availability of new benefits, but do not celebrate the Constitution. It had nothing to do with it. Chief Justice, he's reading that dissent for the first time ever, reading a dissent from the bench, Kermit Roosevelt.
Yeah, I'm saddened by that, to be honest. I'm sorry that he has such an impoverished vision of our Constitution, because, you know, this is just how the Constitution worked in Brown v. Board of Education. People don't say that's illegitimate anymore. This is just how the Constitution worked in our sex equality cases. People don't say anymore those are not founded on the Constitution. So, you know, this is an opportunity for Chief Justice Roberts to embrace a vision of the Constitution as doing a little bit more than he seems to think it does. But he didn't do that. I think we should be celebrating the Constitution today.
Naomi Rao, talk about the ramifications of this for gays and lesbians. I mean, it's not just gay marriage now legal in this country. We're talking about tax benefits, hospital visitations, adoptions, among other things.
Right. I mean, there are absolutely many state and federal benefits that are tied to having the marriage status. And, you know, there are literally hundreds of laws that depend on marriage. And so, you know, same-sex couples will be able to benefit from, or, you know, from those laws and also have the obligations that those laws impose. So I think that's pretty clear.
Evan Wolfson is president of the Freedom to Marry organization. He's a central figure in the gay marriage movement. He said on this issue that the U.S. has been, quote, a patchwork of discrimination, that previously 36 states allowed gay marriage, 16 of them by their own accord, but 20 of them by federal court order. And by, you know, just 3 years ago, by comparison, just 6 states allowed gay marriage. Talk about how quickly this issue has gained acceptance and really taken root in this country, Kermit Roosevelt.
Well, this social movement for equality has moved faster than either race or sex discrimination. But I think there's a reason for that, which is that we had a real tipping point when the social discrimination stopped being severe enough to force people to hide their sexual orientation. And once you didn't have the closet anymore, suddenly people realized that their friends, their neighbors, their family members were gay. Suddenly attitudes changed very fast.
Kermit, I'm going to jump in here. The President of the United States, Barack Obama, is making a statement from the White House on the Supreme Court ruling legalizing gay marriage.
Sometimes 2 steps forward, 1 step back, propelled by the persistent effort of dedicated citizens. And then sometimes there are days like this, when that slow, steady effort is rewarded with justice that arrives like a thunderbolt. This morning, the Supreme Court recognized that the Constitution guarantees marriage equality. In doing so, they've reaffirmed that all Americans are entitled to the equal protection of the law, that all people should be treated equally, regardless of who they are or who they love. This decision will end the patchwork system we currently have. It will end the uncertainty hundreds of thousands of same-sex couples face from not knowing whether their marriage, legitimate in the eyes of one state, will remain if they decide to move or even visit another. This ruling will strengthen all of our communities by offering to all loving same-sex couples the dignity of marriage across this great land. In my second inaugural address, I said that if we are truly created equal, then surely the love we commit to one another must be equal as well. It is gratifying to see that principle enshrined into law by this decision. This ruling is a victory for Jim Obergefell and the other plaintiffs in the case. It's a victory for gay and lesbian couples who have fought so long for their basic civil rights. It's a victory for their children, whose families will now be recognized as equal to any other. It's a victory for the allies and friends and supporters who spent years, even decades, working and praying for change to come. And this ruling is a victory for America. This decision affirms what millions of Americans already believe in their hearts. When all Americans are treated as equal, we are all more free. My administration has been guided by that idea. It's why we stopped defending the so-called Defense of Marriage Act, and why we were pleased when the court finally struck down a central provision of that discriminatory law. It's why we ended Don't Ask, Don't Tell. From extending full marital benefits to federal employees and their spouses, to expanding hospital visitation rights for LGBT patients and their loved ones, we've made real progress in advancing equality for LGBT Americans in ways that were unimaginable not too long ago. I know change for many of our LGBT brothers and sisters must have seemed so slow for so long. But compared to so many other issues, America's shift has been so quick. I know that Americans of goodwill continue to hold a wide range of views on this issue. Opposition in some cases has been based on sincere and deeply held beliefs. All of us who welcome today's news should be mindful of that fact. Recognize different viewpoints. Revere our deep commitment to religious freedom. But today should also give us hope that on the many issues with which we grapple, often painfully, real change is possible.
It's President Obama at the White House calling today's Supreme Court ruling a victory for America. When all Americans are treated as equals, we are all more free, he said. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about today's historic decision, 5-4 decision by the Supreme Court, that same-sex couples have the right to marry everywhere in the United States. We're speaking with Kermit Roosevelt, professor at the University of Pennsylvania School of Law, and with Naomi Rao, professor at George Mason Law School. Here's an interview today with CNN, Marty Roos, with the Human Rights Campaign expressing elation over the Supreme Court's same-sex marriage ruling, predicting joy and fulfillment for future generations of Americans.
There'll be more marriages, there'll be more joy, there'll be more celebrations, and young people today will be able to live fuller lives. It's just an amazing, wonderful day for America. America has lived up to her promise of liberty and justice for all.
And here's Austin Nimix, senior counsel for the Alliance Defending Freedom, speaking out against the court ruling.
Today, 5 lawyers, as the court mentioned, took away the voices of over 300 million Americans to continue to debate the most important social institution in the history of the world.
Associated Press reporting now that in Metro Atlanta, the court there has married gay couples after the ruling strikes down Georgia's gay marriage ban. So it is beginning. Kermit Roosevelt, talk about Justice Anthony Kennedy's role in this. All eyes have been on him throughout this process. He's had a history of backing gay rights, including voting to strike down the Defense of Marriage Act in 2013. Talk about his leadership on the court in this issue.
Well, I think there's no doubt that gay rights is going to be a central part of Justice Kennedy's legacy, and quite possibly the greatest part of it. He's been the author of really every important pro-gay rights decision the Supreme Court has issued. And when you think about it, this is an area that fits very well with Justice Kennedy's jurisprudential perspective, which is he believes in an aggressive court protecting individual rights, and he believes in the ability of the justices to figure out what's important. He's not a restrained justice, and so he's willing to step forward in the name of liberty.
Naomi, how do you see him?
You know, on this historic day, you know, talking about, you know, the meaning of the Constitution and the importance of the rule of law, I guess, sounds, puts one on the side of kind of being the fuddy-duddy formalist. But I guess, you know, I guess maybe that's who I am. And, you know, formalism and, you know, focusing on the text of the Constitution, the history of the Constitution, in many ways, is what makes us a nation of laws and not men. And Justice Kennedy has a lot of soaring rhetoric in his opinion, but perhaps not so much law.
Let's go to the phones here. Hao Sang from Norman, Oklahoma, is on the line. Welcome to the program. Hello.
Hi, Jane. Panelists, it's Hao Sang, and I'm very lucky because President Obama just said everything I wanted to say live on radio. I just wanted to add that over 30 years ago, I used to work in a restaurant, and the majority of the employees were either gay or Iranians like me. And we had a small church group that was used to walk in there and ask for to be seated in areas where gays and foreigners would not serve them. And then from that day, I was counting on this day to actually come around. And I'm happy for all the gay and lesbian brothers and my sisters all over the world in the United States. And I got to give thumbs up to the Irish people who actually beat us to it.
Hussein, so, thank you. I'm glad you called. Here's Andrew in Dayton, Ohio. Andrew, you're on the air. Welcome. Andrew, are you there?
Yeah, hello. Can you hear me?
Hi, yes. Go ahead, please.
Hi. Oh, yeah, I just wanted to say, you know, it's an honor, first of all, to be on here, to be able to speak to you and the American people on this day. Just, you know, I'm 27 years old, and this must feel something like what it felt like for civil rights, to, you know, when that came around. But, you know, I just want to say I grew up with my parents who were heterosexual, of course, and their friends who were gay, and there was no reason to even talk about that. They were some of the greatest people, you know, I've known growing up. They've always had our backs. Anytime we've needed help, they've been there for us. And, you know, I think it's just a shame that it's taken this long for, you know, otherwise reasonable people to come to this conclusion. And, you know, we have to keep being mindful, just like in civil rights, you know, just because the courts and, you know, the political system has decided this is wrong doesn't mean other people have. You know, we just have to be mindful that there are other people that we're going to have to keep this struggle up with, and that just because, you know, it's legal in the public eye doesn't mean that everybody's going to agree with it. But you got my vote, and, you know, I'm glad everybody has the rights they have today, and let's keep it moving.
All right, Andrew, thank you. Thank you very much. Here's Mark in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Hi, Mark. Welcome to the program.
Howdy, y'all.
Hi. Go ahead.
I just want to I completely believe in the rule of law, and I respect the law, and I respect the courts, and I think it's one of our rights to do what you want to do in the pursuit of happiness. For me, it's more of a morality issue. It doesn't mesh with my faith and my morality for same sex marriages. And I respect the court and I follow the law. I just don't think that it's right, though.
Mark, thank you. Kermit Roosevelt, how would you respond to a caller like Mark?
Well, I would quote, I think, actually one of the dissenting opinions from the Supreme Court, which is that the Constitution is made for people of fundamentally different views, and it's designed to create a framework within which political movements can argue, but equality of right is guaranteed. So unless there's a very good reason not to allow gays and lesbians to participate in the institution of marriage on equal terms, unless there's some harm that the state can show, and they completely failed to do that, then our Constitution gives them the liberty to do that, and it doesn't hurt anyone else.
Naomi, how do you respond to that?
Well, it's not clear that the Constitution allows you to do anything that doesn't harm someone else. And marriage is a particular type of thing, because it's not a negative liberty, like the liberty that was recognized in the Lawrence case that struck down the Texas Sodomy Act. Marriage is an affirmative benefit that you get from the state. And so it's a very different type of thing. It's not just the liberty to be free to have personal relationships with whomever you choose. It is a right to be recognized by the state and to be given a particular status by the state, which is a very different type of thing than being allowed to do what it is that you choose to do.
Well, I appreciate your time, both of you, today. I know you have to run. Naomi Rao, professor at George Mason Law School, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
And Kermit Roosevelt, professor at the University of Pennsylvania School of Law. I appreciate your time today, Kermit. Thanks.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure.
Let me bring a couple more guests into the conversation. They've got very different takes on today's court ruling. With us from Chicago is Camilla Taylor, legal director for Lambda Legal. Welcome, Camilla. Nice to have you.
Thanks for having me.
And from Washington, Edward Whalen, president of the Ethics and Public Policy Center. He directs the program on the Constitution, the courts, and the culture. He clerked for Justice Antonin Scalia at the Supreme Court. Ed Whalen, welcome to On Point.
Thank you.
I'd like to ask you about this religious liberty issue, because Mark the Caller just brought it up. There are a lot of questions about what this ruling means for religious liberty issues in this country. Can you speak to that, Ed, first, and just sort of let us know how that falls into the realm of this decision today?
Well, sure. I think it's very ominous for religious liberty. At oral argument, the Solicitor General volunteered that the tax-exempt status of religious organizations that adhere to the traditional understanding of marriage will be at issue. There are a whole host of penalties and deprivations that those who adhere to the traditional understanding of marriage may face, from schools not being accredited, licenses not being made available, federal and state tax-exempt status being deprived. So, look, this opinion doesn't dictate anything in particular about that, but the whole path that the majority seems on and its rhetoric seems to invite that. So I think we're looking at a very ugly future, one that may make it impossible for millions and millions of people to continue to live in this land.
Camilla Taylor, is it possible to your mind that faith-based schools and charities and institutions now may lose their tax-exempt statuses? I mean, does this ruling create a head-on collision with some religious expression in this country?
Absolutely not. And in fact, on page 27 of the decision of the United States Supreme Court, it says, finally, it must be emphasized that religions and those who adhere to religious doctrines may continue to advocate with utmost sincere conviction that by divine precepts, same-sex marriage should not be condoned. That's a quote from the decision. It also mentions how the First Amendment protects people and religious organizations in particular so that they're given proper protection as they seek to teach the principles that they adhere to. What the decision is about the fundamental right to marry, and the court makes clear that states may not deprive same-sex couples of their fundamental right to marry, just as states may not deprive interracial couples of their fundamental right to marry. It's nothing short of an affirmation of the equal dignity and the common right to be understood as persons under the Constitution that are enjoyed by lesbian and gay people. It's a recognition of our common humanity.
Indeed, there are questions that will arise, though practical issues, about whether rabbis and priests and pastors will be compelled to provide religious marriage counseling to same-sex couples. What about religious colleges? Will they be required to provide married student housing to same-sex couples? What about adoption for same-sex couples? Catholic charities in Illinois and Massachusetts and D.C. actually have already closed their adoption units because of this issue. So, Ed Whalen, how do you see this? Do you see a way in this society that we can protect both the rights of same-sex couples and people of faith?
Well, sure, there's a way. The way would be to enact specific, robust religious liberty protections, but certainly not to rely on a throwaway line at the end of the opinion, which the dissenters point out doesn't really say much. Now, if Camilla is going to commit here that she and her organization will fight against any deprivation of tax-exempt status, that would be a good start. But we've heard lots of promises over the years about how A won't lead to B, won't lead to C, but there's a certain logic built into the law, even into the illogic of Justice Kennedy's opinion that threatens to unfold in a way that will be very menacing. So, no, I don't think a sentence or two tucked into the end of an opinion provides any real comfort. We need specific, robust legislative protections. There's a bill in Congress right now called the First Amendment Defense Act that would provide those at the federal level, but those are also needed at the state level. And they ought to protect religious schools, churches, religious individuals, and a whole host of areas. There's plenty of room to debate where one draws the lines, and you know, I think that could be a healthy debate, but there ought to be, if we are going to have a country where we can live in peace, there's going to have to be significant legal protections.
Let's get Alexander in here from Boston. Hi, Alexander. Welcome to On Point.
Hello. How are you?
Fine, thanks. Go ahead.
I have just one quick question. I read that it was argued before the court had to decide whether it was it would be a matter of sexual orientation or simply sex. That is, persons of the same sex can marry regardless of sexual orientation, or are they going to bring in the right of gay people? Can you clarify perhaps how they decided on this?
All right, Alexander. Camilla, do you know the answer to Alexander's question?
Absolutely. It was a decision that was based, first of all, on due process, so the fundamental right to marry, which has been recognized over and over again by the United States Supreme Court. And the court held that the fundamental right to marry was being deprived. These lesbian gay people enjoy the fundamental right to marry, and they were deprived of this fundamental liberty. The court also ruled on equal protection grounds, holding that it was a violation of the equal dignity or equal liberty of lesbian and gay people. So the Equal Protection Clause and the Due Process Clause are linked, and it would discriminate against same-sex couples in the exercise of their fundamental right if you prevent them from marrying. Mm-hmm. So it was really not the sex discrimination argument that you were referring to that was made in oral argument and that Chief Justice Roberts picked up on. That wasn't the express holding of the opinion. It was more about discrimination against same-sex couples and lesbian and gay individuals.
And the Equal Protection Clause and the Due Process Clause, Camilla, as I understand it, part of the 14th Amendment, right, which has been the basis of the most landmark civil rights cases for Black Americans in this country. So it enshrines equal protection now for gay Americans as well.
Exactly. And in fact, the court referenced a lot of past decisions that have relied on both of those principles, including Loving versus Virginia, which the court mentioned explicitly numerous times, saying that that was a decision based both on the fundamental right to marry and on equal protection principles. And this decision is no different. I would like to respond, though, to Ed's claims about religious liberty. Of course, there are plenty of churches and synagogues today who refuse to marry certain groups of people. So some churches don't marry someone who's been divorced or marry someone who's marrying someone of another faith. And yet the First Amendment protects the right of churches to determine whom they wish to marry. And I want to make sure that the opponents of the freedom to marry for same-sex couples don't make cynical use of this sweeping victory to try to pass new legislation that is completely unwarranted based on a fear or a scare tactic that is completely not true.
Do you see that happening, Ed? Cynical use of this sweeping victory?
We've heard before these claims of scaremongering. You know, we had law professors say 10 years ago, oh, don't worry, there'll never be any risk to tax-exempt status. And then the Solicitor General of the United States stands up before the Supreme Court and says, you bet there will be. So no, there's not scaremongering here. There's a perception about where exactly the logic built into this decision leads, and it will indeed be ominous. And it's interesting that while Camilla before cited a couple of these sentences, she's not going to make any commitment, which I can understand. They're going to try to have a mopping up operation now where any dissent is stifled. And, I think it's going to be very, very difficult for, and very, very quickly for religious believers to continue to live in this country.
Here's Lisa in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Hi, Lisa. Welcome to the program. I've got about 30 seconds here, so if you could be brief, that'd be great.
Jane, it's like this. Will they be able to bully people into making cakes and florist into providing what they do not want to do against their will because of this law?
All right, Lisa, thank you. Camilla Taylor, your response.
While many states have non-discrimination laws that prohibit discriminating against someone because of their race or their sex or their sexual orientation, however, a majority of states still lack such explicit protection. And one of the things that we need to do going forward as a movement is to make sure that lesbian and gay people and trans people are protected from discrimination everywhere they live in this country. Now, if you're a business and you offer services to the general public, you have to follow the rules about non-discrimination that apply to everybody.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about today's ruling at the Supreme Court, a 5-4 ruling that overturns remaining bans on same-sex marriages across the country. Here's Stacey Long Simmons, the Director of Public Policy and Government Affairs for the National LGBTQ Task Force, speaking with reporters after the decision was handed down. She said that advocates for same-sex couples would continue fighting for equal rights in areas beyond marriage.
We're going to continue to fight for the opportunity to have our rights extended in other arenas, whether it's housing, employment, or health care and education.
And Haley Baranowski was against the ruling. In an interview with the Associated Press, she said that she and others were disappointed but would keep fighting.
We're here to obviously to support traditional marriage, and we're disappointed with the ruling today, but we know that the conversation about marriage is not going to end today. It's going to continue for years, and so we're going to continue wanting religious liberty for Americans as a whole and knowing that's going to continue.
Camilla Taylor, talk about the fight in your mind for equal rights beyond marriage for same-sex couples.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's hard to take a breath from the celebration today. It was such a sweeping victory. We'll need to implement that victory as soon as we can. But as I mentioned, there are still a majority of states that lack any express protection from discrimination in employment and public accommodations based on sexual orientation and gender identity. So that is one of our big fights. We'll also need to respond, I'm sure, to the pushback that Ed has already described in terms of organizations trying to say that they should have a pass from complying with non-discrimination rules because they can describe their desire to discriminate or their refusal to serve people in religious terms. Mm-hmm. And so we'll need to work to make sure that the rules that protect everybody from discrimination, whether it's race or sex or sexual orientation that's at stake or gender identity, that those rules apply fairly and firmly to everybody without anyone getting a special pass because they can describe their desire to discriminate in a religious way.
And Ed Whalen, what's next for your organization?
Well, organizationally, we don't particularly take positions, so I'm not going to spell anything out there. But I will say that you know, Camilla is trying to have it both ways, saying that there aren't all these protections nationwide, but somehow everyone needs to comply with these protections. Look, the question is whether a religious organization, for example, is going to lose its tax-exempt status. Camilla says, oh, it has a First Amendment right not to conduct same-sex marriages. Well, that's true, but that doesn't go to the question of deprivation of tax-exempt status. So she pretended at the beginning of this that it's scaremongering to say that tax-exempt status won't be threatened. Now she's acknowledging that it will be and trying to dress this up in terms of folks discriminating. So, again, I think the future is very ominous. And, you know, we ought to be working this out. It would have been better, as Chief Justice Roberts spells out in his powerful dissent, to have this issue worked out democratically in a way that, frankly, the other side was winning a lot. And it's very reasonable to think the path would continue that way. But instead, we have this very divisive opinion that's going to make things very, very difficult in this country for years to come.
Ed Whalen joining me from Washington, president of the Ethics and Public Policy Center, and Camilla Taylor, Marriage Project Director at Lambda Legal. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Joining me now from Washington, Karen Tumulty, national political correspondent for The Washington Post. Karen, great to have you with us.
Well, thanks so much.
Your view of what happened today at the Supreme Court.
Well, you know, looking at this in political terms, I think what it has done is put a big choice in front of the Republican Party. Are they going to continue to fight this issue and use it to sort of mobilize their conservative base? Or are they going to essentially take the loss here and, you know, move on to other issues that, quite frankly, a number of their presidential candidates would rather be talking about in this election? Because, you know, the same-sex marriage is an issue where, you know, the conservative Republican base finds itself on the opposite side of not only the majority of American public opinion, but a fair-sized, you know, a goodly number of Republicans as well.
Well, here I'm just reading over the wires, former Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum condemning the decision by what he calls five unelected justices who make up the ruling's 5-4 majority. Former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee, also in the ring, tweets that the ruling is, quote, irrational and threatens religious liberty and that Congress must act. So clearly they're in the fight here. They're talking about this already.
Yes, but at the same time, you're hearing of much more tempered statements from Jeb Bush, from Marco Rubio. Here we have Lindsey Graham, who comes from South Carolina. You can't get a more conservative state than this, saying, rather than pursuing a divisive effort that would be doomed to fail, I am committing myself to ensuring the protection of religious liberties of all Americans. Essentially, what these candidates are saying is, look, you know, this is now the law. So rather than alienating people who believe this way, let's concentrate, number one, on how important it is for the next president to, you know, pick the kinds of justices who would, you know, rule differently. And number two, looking at the fights on the questions of religious liberty that, you know, may potentially be winnable.
How would you answer the question, Karen Tumulty, about some of the things we were talking about in the earlier segment, the religious liberty issues, the tax-exempt status for certain groups who may not agree with this decision? How will that play out in the weeks and months and years ahead?
Well, you know, I'm not a legal expert, but I can tell you that, you know, there are things that are going to push people out of their comfort zone politically on this issue. You know, if in fact it looks like the government is intruding too far, you know, or intruding at all into the rights of churches to, you know, conduct rituals and ceremonies according to their own beliefs, I do think you could get a pushback on that. You know, in some ways, it's almost like the Supreme Court's 1973 decision in Roe v. Wade, where most people agree that abortion should be legal most of the time. But you do get into individual circumstances where public opinion swings the other way.
Here's Bobby Jindal, the newest U.S. presidency man in the ring, saying that no earthly court can alter God's definition of marriage. Marriage is between a man and a woman. It was established by God, and no earthly court can alter that. A lot of comments from our listeners on Facebook. David says, progress. Progress isn't always good. Michael says, great. Here's Susan said, God bless America, love wins. Let's go to the phones here. Nikhil from Guilford, Vermont is on the line. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I just want to make a quick point.
Okay.
The decision of the court is obviously far-reaching, but there's a point that really needs to be stressed. At the head of the show, one of the opponents was talking about how five Supreme Court justices were imposing this, and this is something that's clearly being echoed all across the blogosphere. But it really is important to remember that there really is broad national support of this. The decision only affects 13 out of the 50 states, and polls repeatedly make it clear that the majority of the population are really accepting of same-sex marriage. One might disagree with the decision or how it happened, but people can't continue to pretend that this is something that came out of nowhere, simply being imposed on the country.
Nikhil, thank you. Karen Tumulty?
Oh, and I agree. And I think, too, that, you know, the justices, this decision, the court had telegraphed it. I mean, I don't think anyone is surprised at what side they came down on.
Talk about you talked about the Republicans who are in this race. Talk about the Democrats. How does Hillary Clinton move forward with this sort of decision, and frankly, with the decision on the Affordable Care Act as well?
Well, it's interesting that on if you follow Twitter, that Hillary Clinton's logo on Twitter right now, her avatar is now in rainbow colors, as is the White House's. I think today is a day that, you know, that people are really who are on that side of the question, the majority of Americans are celebrating.
It's an interesting place for Jeb Bush to be as well. Talk about how you see him moving forward with this issue.
Well, Jeb Bush has made it very clear. Oh, and by the way, just backing up to Hillary Clinton, it is also worth noting that she was much later than most people in her party, including the president, including Vice President Joe Biden, to come around to declaring that she was in favor of same-sex marriage. But anyway, back to Jeb Bush. Jeb Bush is, I think, in the different tone of these different candidates, you can see sort of what segment of the Republican Party they think is the one that's going to take them to the nomination. And basically, you know, Bobby Jindal, Rick Santorum, Mike Huckabee, they are all running to win Iowa, which is dominated by evangelical Christians. They want to, you know, this is the kind of message that might do well in South Carolina, that might do well in much of the South. Jeb Bush is running in almost a different bracket of the Republican field. He is running not only to be sort of the more establishment candidate, but also to be somebody who can argue, look, I am a stronger candidate in a general election. I have a better shot at defeating Hillary Clinton than these other guys do. Mm-hmm. And I think that his message today is also, you know, positioning himself not just for the nomination, but also for November.
Mm-hmm. Here's one woman celebrating today outside the court after the Supreme Court ruling on gay marriage.
Thank you to the American people. It just shows us that progress is possible.
Here's William in Savannah, Georgia. Hi, William. Welcome to On Point.
Oh, hi, Jane.
Hi. Go ahead.
With the recent decision made by the Supreme Court, how do you think it's going to impact the 2016 the presidential race in terms of future policy ideas and maybe the current stances? Are they going to change whatsoever?
William, thank you. Karen Tumulty.
I think you are going to have, at a minimum, much more focus on the judiciary, both as kind of a sparring partner in this race, but also, you know, an emphasis on how important it is to think about potential Supreme Court picks in the next president.
Karen Tumulty, here's a question here. There's obviously no appealing a Supreme Court ruling, but Congress has historically passed laws to render a Supreme Court decision irrelevant, and that law would stand until someone brings the case back to the court. Do you see that happening here, or probably not, I would think?
No, what this would take at this point, I think, is a constitutional amendment. And the idea that a constitutional amendment could pass, you know, that you could get this through 3/4 of the states and a supermajority of the Congress really looks pretty unrealistic.
Here's Maggie in Exeter, New Hampshire. Maggie, welcome to the program. Maggie, are you there?
Hello?
Hi, Maggie. Go ahead. Welcome to On Point.
Hi. I'm just very curious about the Republican candidates coming up because what I've learned thus far from Pew Study research is that 61% of young Republicans in ages 18 to 29 do support same-sex marriage. So I'm curious what demographics are really going to aim towards here, because in the last election, a lot of the candidates, even on the Democratic side, were forced to say, I don't support same-sex because it wasn't the majority. Mm. I'm curious how everyone's going to see the Republican candidates now.
All right, Maggie,
Boy.
Thank you.
And Maggie, you have put your finger on it. This is very much of a generational issue. You see a real divide in opinion between younger Republicans and older ones. And even if you talk to evangelical leaders, they will say, you know, when they look out in the pews, they see a lot of support for gay marriage among young evangelicals. This is very different, by the way. I think there's polling that shows that younger evangelicals are actually more likely to be opposed to abortion than older ones. But on gay marriage, they are much more likely to support the idea. And, you know, in part, I think because, you know, gay people now live much more in the mainstream of American life. You know, people people have gay neighbors. They have openly gay siblings and cousins and aunts and uncles. And I think that has really been responsible more than anything else for this really drastic swing in public opinion in the last decade.
Today, after the ruling from the Supreme Court, CNN captured President Obama's phone call to plaintiff Jim Obergefell, congratulating him.
I figured when I saw you that we were going to be hoping for some good news, and we did. And I just wanted to say congratulations.
Thank you so much, sir. I think it was your wishes.
You know, your leadership on this, you know, has changed the country.
I really appreciate that, Mr. President. It's really been an honor for me to be involved in this fight and to have been able to, you know, fight for my marriage.
Karen Tumulty, remind us of the evolution of Barack Obama on this issue.
Well, when Barack Obama ran for president in 2008, he, along with Hillary Clinton, were both, you know, publicly opposed to gay marriage. He said, I can't count the number of times he said marriage should be between a man and a woman. But in his chief political strategist, David Axelrod's recent autobiography, he said that essentially that was a lie, that the president even then knew that he felt otherwise on the issue. I think that, again, as recently as the 2008 election, this was just not a safe place for even Democrats to be. In 2004, gay marriage initiatives were on the ballots in 11 states, and in 11 states, gay marriage failed.
Karen Tumulty, national political reporter at The Washington Post, thank you so much for your time today. I know you've got a lot going on. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
We will put the links to today's Supreme Court opinions at our website, onpointradio.org. You can find all of them there. Many thanks to my guest today. You can continue the conversation. Get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and on Facebook at On Point Radio. On Point is produced by Nick Anderson, Catherine Brewer, Abigail Collins, Julie Jopp, Eileen Amata, Stefano Katsonis, Sarah Platt, Caitlin O'Keefe, James Ross, and I've got a little help from Aidan Connolly and Lily Tyson today. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.